any kind of a application framework, any individual piece, like we talked, doesn't do a lot, and it probably isn't going to work. You can't just browse the fuse and, you know, see if it works.
Right. Well, the whole fuse box concept is this framework that it's kind of, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on there.
Absolutely.
And it's, so when you run code, where in the whole framework is the problem? I know I've heard from a lot of developers that see that as an issue relative to Fusebox. But now we're stepping back a little bit. We've been talking about the excitement of the integration and how it all goes together, and that's fun. But now we're talking about, we're back at writing fuses.
Right, because I said when I check out a fuse, mm-hmm. right, only check out one at a time.
One at a time.
When I check it in, I check in that fuse and that fuse's test harness.
Test harness. Okay, so what's a test harness?
A test harness is kind of what it sounds like. It's a harness. It's a wrapper that includes the fuse but has all of the stuff that the fuse needs to work with.
Okay.
So if the fuse is expecting a query, you put a query in there. Now, talking a second about query sims and all that sort of thing. They're typically quite small. You know, if we said something like a real simple one that said, you know, welcome to our application, Jeff. You know, it's looking for a variable. Maybe it's called session.user.name or something like that, right? So we'll just create something that says, you know, CSSet session.user.name equals, you know, test. So it'll say, welcome, test. But the point is that the fuse doesn't break.
Right? So the test harness sets up the conditions specified by the fuse doc.
Correct.
And then includes the
fuse
to be tested.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And what I do is I put all the test harnesses in a directory underneath the circuit itself.
Mm-hmm.
And they always say, and they're named exactly the same as the fuse is.
Okay.
So that they can always say, you know, cf include template equals ... cgi.scriptname.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, I do it a little bit differently. I have them in the same directory and then prefix tst underscore and then the fuse name.
There you go. So. Yeah. But what this does, you know, if we're talking about deferring coding until the very end of the process, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely important that everybody has a high degree of confidence that when this fuse is written, it's done correctly. And you can do more sophisticated things. You can do real tests in there. For example, in an e-commerce site, if somebody's going to add a product to a cart, I can loop over various quantity values. What happens if they put in space one? Does my code allow for that? What happens if they type in O-N-E?
Right.
In other words, I don't want it just to break.
Mm-hmm.
You know. What happens if they type in 1.5? What happens if they type in -3? Do we owe them money? So having these test harnesses is very valuable. This is sort of part of the whole idea of what they sometimes call test-driven development.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is that when you check that fuse in, you are very sure that the fuse works. Now, you don't know. It's not your job as the fuse coder to figure out, will it work in the context of the application, right?
Right.
But it will tell you, does my fuse work?
Okay, so we get all of the fuses coded, and they all have their unit tests, their test harnesses. They've passed the unit test, and they're all back in the hands of me, the architect.
Right.
Okay, so now it's my responsibility to make sure that they work together.
Correct.
And this is where my errors start showing.
Absolutely right. And this is where you're going to do this in the circuit XML file. Each circuit is going to, that's where the XML file really describes what are the fuse actions the circuit's responsible, and what does it mean to do this fuse action. We were talking about including fuses or calling other fuse actions, that sort of thing. If you've done your job well, everything's going to work perfectly. Is that realistic? No, probably not.
But I've had it happen one time.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a hallelujah moment. Oh. This is just, it works.
Yes.
Ah.
But even in that incredibly high stress situation I was talking about with the Sun site,
mm-hmm.
it took me 8 hours to straighten the whole thing out.
For how many fuses?
There probably 600 fuses.
In how many circuits?
Eight
Pretty reasonably sized application.
Yeah.
And to do that in 8 hours that's phenomenal.
Yeah, it was. I wouldn't ever want to try that again under that high stress, because I think the chances for failure were so high.
That's why you have gray eyebrows.
There you go. We were lucky. Yeah, and you've got dark eyebrows and gray hair. Very odd. But it does show you, you stress the system and you find out about the system and how good it is and what its strengths and weaknesses are. So that unit testing stuff with test harnesses, very, very valuable. Then we stitch the whole thing together. And at that point, integration should really be very anticlimactic. Right? Now, let me go back for a second to prototype freeze, because I forgot one thing I wanted to say about it. Prototype freeze forms the basis for acceptance testing. Right? Because here we are, we think we're all done with the job's all integrated. Mm-hmm. What do we do? Do we go to the client and say, let us show you the app that we've built? Do you like it? Well, no. First of all, they've already seen the app. Right? We haven't changed anything about the application they've seen. It's identical to the prototype that we showed them, 4 weeks earlier.
Right.
What we say is at least the way I do it, is I have a formal, I want to get closure, and I'm a big believer in ritualizing this stuff. So I have a meeting with the client. I pass out those prototype pages that were printed out that had all of our signatures on it, right? And to each client. And then we have a list of all of the use cases that were determined. What do we need to do? And then I will ask the client to sit down and we'll run through use cases. Does the application do what it was supposed to do? Now, at this point, the client will say, you know what would be nice? And my response to this is I immediately start looking through the prototype pages. And I'll say, I'm sorry, I don't see that. What page are you on? And they go, oh, no, it's not there. But this would be, I said, that is a great idea for the next version.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll make a note of the thing. But the purpose of acceptance testing is to see, does the actual application do what was promised by the prototype, right, with a frozen right prototype.
Right. And that's, I think that's an incredibly important point to emphasize as well, is that one of the difficulties that some developers get into with clients, particularly very imaginative clients, is almost a butting heads over, well, that's not what you said you wanted. So when the suggestion for a you know what would be nice comes up, as it inevitably will,
right,
rather than using it as an opportunity to springboard for the next version, as you've just said,
mm-hmm,
the technical person's emotional response is often, but that's not what you asked for. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes a situation where there's a standoff,
mm-hmm,
about an argument almost about, this is what I want, but that's not what you asked for, but this is what I want, but that's not what you asked for, rather than, this is what I want, that's an excellent idea, we can incorporate that in the next version. Let's go on with looking at the rest of what we have in this version.
Right.
I'll make a note of that. Oh, that's, and I think often as technical people, we don't focus enough on the relational skills to do those kinds of things, to always take what our client's saying as opportunity for the next thing that's coming.
Absolutely. Yeah. And whether you're in business for yourself or you're working for somebody else, we want to be adding value.
Right.
And by having that client understand, A, that you appreciate their concern and their need, and that you have a plan to deal with that, but that we need closure on where we are right now. And again, if you have not done a good job preparing your client, you can run into problems, which is why I spend a lot of time early on in those first meetings and explaining the process and belaboring the process. Mm-hmm. But by that point, when we get to acceptance testing, all we're concerned about is, does the prototype run? And if it does, by definition, we have a successful project.
So if our finished application matches our prototype pages, then we're done with this phase, and we can start talking about flipping the next phase.
Absolutely right. Now, if you have a huge project, and I've had a few that were really, really big, we've broken the thing into phases.
Sure.
And run the flip through each of the individual phases, right?
I actually had a project at one point that we broke into sections and had separate teams doing the flip process in parallel.
Oh, how interesting.
And it was very interesting in that it sounds very hazardous, uh-huh. but what we discovered was the only point at which we really needed communication was among the three architects.
Right.
When they were doing the architecture phase, they needed to talk to each other to make sure that their sections, wherever there might be interaction between the sections, that they were okay.
Yeah.
But it was brilliant. And Fusebox really lends itself to that type of thing. You can slice a project either into phases broken over time,
mm-hmm.
or into, we called them sections, but however mm-hmm. you want to call those divisions that are actually parallel in time,
mm-hmm.
or even both. You can really dice the thing up depending on what kind of resources you have available to throw at it. So that's excellent. That's very good.
Now, the other nice thing about this whole process is that at the end of it, you've got an extremely well-documented application
mm-hmm.
that you didn't have to have somebody different come back and try to retrofit documentation on. And that makes maintenance of the application very, very simple.
A piece of cake. An absolute piece of cake. In fact, I have one client that I maintain a relationship with, who I got into a project with in a very bad situation, in that the person who was responsible for the decision making was unavailable at the time that we were doing the design and the flip process on the initial version. And what that meant was that I had to rely on past experience with the client and basically kind of pretend to be the client in going through the process. It was very difficult, and I don't recommend it at all. What it resulted in is a finished product that worked but didn't quite satisfy what the client would want, because he wasn't available to do all of those decisions that we would have done during the prototype phase,
mm-hmm.
to make all of those little interface decisions. So fortunately, in the case of this particular client, we wound up being in what's much more like a traditional development lifecycle, where we're in perpetual maintenance now.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll make suggestions about what they want, and we'll implement them in kind of a little mini flip. Mm-hmm. for every little thing that they want to do. And that's fine, because they happen to have deep pockets and they can, you know, do this on an ongoing, long-term basis. But that's one of the kind of pitfalls of not having the resources available during the prototype phase, is we kind of wound up in what you might think of as a traditional death march sort of thing. But because it's operational, it's actually in maintenance phase, and the maintenance is really quite simple because it's all Fusebox and it's all nice little chunks of stuff to do. So